You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, I'm Micah. I'm here with my friend and fellow host, Derek. How are you, Derek?
What's going on, man? And we should have Johnny with us, our longtime co-host producer who's been out for a little while. Should be joining us in just a couple minutes. I'm doing good, man.
Buddy.
He should be back here. I know Johnny's got some stuff to share, some articles, some local events. Guys, we do this every week. Live Free, Think Free. We've been broadcasting since summer 2011, bringing you uncensored news, underground music. And we do this currently on 90.1 KPFT in Houston, Friday afternoons, 5 p.m. Central. And of course, you can find the archives on kpft.org. And at the moment, KPFT is doing a fundraiser, fund drive, as we do here for community-supported, commercial-free, corporate-free radio. And we want to always invite everybody to support what we're doing here, whether you live in Houston or not. If you support people like us having an opportunity to share our voices, you can go to kpft.org, check out the donate page, and find out more about giving the station. And we want to give a special shout-out to our buddy John Bush from Austin, Texas, who is a longtime friend, guest of this show, ally. We've worked with him since basically the whole stretch of this show, huh, Micah, back in 2011? So,
yeah,
John, he's been a guest, John, yeah, he's been on here a couple of times. And he gave a pretty strong donation to KPFT in the name of our show, Live Free, Think Free, formerly known as Free Thinker Radio. We just want to shout out John Bush for that. And also just mention that, you know, John is involved in a lot of really great projects. He's involved in the Live Free Academy. You can check that out at livefree.academy is one of his project. And we're thankful for his strong support of our show. And if you go to our website, thehoustonfreethinkers.com, where you can always find all of our archives, you can find the story of our show, you can find past episodes. You'll see a banner that is going to be there for the next couple of weeks until September 3rd. John is hosting an event called the Homesteading on a Budget Workshop, and it's going to be pretty cool event. You can register for free, and there's permaculture teachers and different people, homesteading experts that are going to be talking about it. And a lot of this is relevant to the stories we cover here, Micah, because as you see there, they say fight back against inflation and supply chain shortages, not by just complaining, but thinking about, hey, how can I take care of myself? So if you want to find more about that, yeah, exactly, and find out about those solutions, you can go to our website, again, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can click on that banner there and find out all you need to do there. And yeah, what's up, Johnny? You made it.
Sup, dudes? How's it going?
It's going pretty good, man. We're glad to have all three of us here today.
I see you guys are talking about solutions and such with John Bush.
Yeah, yep, exactly. We're just talking about John giving a strong donation to KPFT in the name of our show, and really thankful for that. And again, if you want to find out more about some of the things he's doing, including this homesteading on a budget workshop, we'll talk about more of that throughout the show and maybe have John on in the coming weeks, because this is not till September 3rd, so you still got time to check it out. But let's go ahead and jump into Johnny. Did you have any local news or anything you wanted to share as far as shows coming up, events?
No local news per se, but yeah, we got the Free AF concert at House of J this Friday. That's our monthly show. It's been going pretty well. Our Patreon's up to $190, and our friend Jade, shout out to Jade, she's actually donated a little mini keg to the show as well. So there's gonna be free beer, free pizza, and free music. It's gonna be wild. So House of J on Friday, and then House of J on Saturday again with Stupid Idiot and Lagrimas and a bunch of other cool bands. But that's all I got for Houston so far. Oh, actually, one more at the end. I believe the end has a show on Saturday as well.
They do. Skyotic Tendency, Toxic Origin, All Gonna Die over there at 7126 Lawndale. Yeah, the end. So yeah, that's another one going on. That looks pretty cool.
I sure do miss free everything shows like that in Houston. Like you said, free pizza, free music. Yeah, well, that's really awesome. And I miss events like that. So,
what about commercial free radio? How do you feel about commercial free radio? Tell me from your heart.
Oh, I feel
so good. I appreciate it. Well, let's go ahead, guys, and jump forward then. Micah, you got any events you want to plug before you dive into this local news?
I just did. I talked about that, the end one. And that one sounds pretty good with All Gonna Die, Skyotic Tendencies, punk show over there. I made it out to the end a week, or I guess 2 weeks ago, and it was a pretty nice little spot. I enjoyed it, and they actually answered some questions of mine that I called before. Yeah, they answered them afterwards, but hey, the fact that they tried to answer them showed that they were courteous to people reaching out, and I thought that went a long way, you know, even though I found my own solution. But it was a great venue. I had a good time there, and I know House of Jay is another great venue, so Johnny mentioned 2-6 shows going on there, and then, like I said, that other one. So let's get on into some of the news. I mean, we've got crazy things going on, and if you're not in Houston, I imagine crazy things are going on near you, and you know, this is a news analysis show, so we're going to pull out of these crazy things kind of what reflections we have on, you know, various themes in, you know, the role of government and freedom and such. So, yeah, this one was a little rough. It was an elderly couple that in Rosenberg, which is near here, near Houston. They're in a federal court over civil and disability rights violations, and this came in a traffic stop in 2020. And it's the oddest story, too, because it says that the police were responding to a weapons call claiming a group of black teenagers had flashed guns at another group of kids in Rosenberg. And so this 57-year-old lady and her husband, who was 67, were driving back to their home after grabbing dinner at a restaurant when they get pulled over by four officers responding to a weapons call. And because the car looked purportedly similar to the other one. So after that, they go ahead and arrest them. And the woman tells the police that her husband's on a dialysis machine, which he had told them too, and that if they cuff him, it'll create a blockage and a dangerous medical condition. Of course, guess what they did? They proceeded to cuff him because, you know, he was probably a violent criminal or something in their mind. So, yeah, and it turns out that they didn't even understand that they had been detained until about 45 minutes after the altercation began. After being uncuffed, the officers told Armstead that they've been searching for three young men who've been driving around shooting at kids. So, yeah, the medical device in his forearm malfunctioned, requiring three different procedures to replace it. I mean, think about what an inconvenience it is to do anything outside your normal. I'm not trying to be too flip, but think about it seriously. When you got to go to a tax office, you got to get your vehicle registered, you got to go to the dentist. So this man all of a sudden had to go through three different procedures and have it replaced, and had, according to attorneys, of course, because, you know, they got to use certain phrases, prolonged pain and suffering, because that's what describes that. The officer now stands accused of violating the couple's Fourth Amendment protections against illegal search and seizure. And it also says that they use excessive force against both of them and violated his rights under the American with Disabilities Act when they cuffed him despite knowing his medical condition. So I guess we'll see how that one turns out.
Yeah, that's we'll definitely try to follow up with that one and see where that goes. Unfortunately, probably not totally unusual in the sense of cops being in a hurry, or, you know, I don't know why if they're looking for three young men, they would stop an elderly couple, but.
Here you go again, though, with like a Fourth Amendment situation. You know, look how many times this comes up. You know, the Tuttles here. I think there's probably reasons that people thought government shouldn't be able to do these things. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it seems like they want us to think all these ideas are archaic and no good.
I think that's kind of what demonizes the cops sometimes, or like dehumanizes the cops sometimes to other people, because they kind of dehumanize you when you say, I'm a super old guy with a medical condition. If you put handcuffs on me, it's going to have this issue. And then the cop could be a freaking person, you know, and just see that he's probably not going to attack me, or we have enough people with guns behind me, hopefully, to take him down. Said that did happen, you know, hypothetically. I'm sure they
made me think of something. Long,
but I'm just saying, like, you know, elderly couple, I mean, it's like, how do you not figure that out? There's a lot of red flags there that they just walked over.
Did you hear how many cops they got pulled over by? Four. Two old people, four cops. Now, the old people could have been packing heat, but, I mean, come on. get for real. They can tell that the guy has a machine. You know, he's going on 70. I'm not saying that everybody going on 70 is on a machine.
Yeah, what does dialysis look like? You have an actual machine attached to you? I'm sorry.
They said it was like strapped to his waist or something in that article, I believe.
He's got a whole ass like machine sticking out of him, and they're like, ah.
Calvin.
He's lying.
I'm not exactly sure how they could tell.
I don't know, but I'm just saying. That's disappointing to hear.
Well, when you think of it this way, I don't know how they could tell, but if there was a way to tell if a man is on dialysis or a way to call in and to see if there's a method for identifying this, like if you were an electrician and you couldn't solve the problem, you'd probably consult a manual of some type or, you know, an expert beyond you. You got four officers there and two elderly people. If the Rosenberg Police Department has a civil suit and loses because they violated this act, they could pay more than the time they would have paid for the officers to go ahead and take the time to process this like it's a concern, you know? I mean, even if they weren't concerned about the people, they could be concerned about the repercussions of, you know, not disobeying a law. And I guess whether you like it or not, that Disabilities Act is a law and it gives some people special rights if they are disabled.
Innocent until proven guilty, right?
Yeah. And that's the other thing, right? You know, so it's a long story, but it's a repetitive story that we hear happening all over the country. And I think it's, you know, each case is unique. We had some other cases that were local police and citizens in the uproar type thing. But we only have so much time, so we had to pick out of them, and this one is the one that came to the forefront. So, yeah, going on. We got so much stuff going on, and if you're not here in Houston, you know, we're third largest city. We love being broadcast on the FM on KPFT 90.1, the Mighty 90. Happy to be here in the fun drive. But if you're not here, you can still contribute and help us out. And if you're not here, these things may be of issue to you because I'm sure in Dallas they're talking about bonds. Now we're talking about billion-dollar bonds. I mean, I don't know. We have to remember.
Let's get into that. Let's get into this billion-dollar bond then that's going on in Harris County. Because is this typical, Micah, for them to be debating billions of dollars on a local level?
I think the numbers are getting bigger and bigger. We've been talking about it on this show for a while. I remember, you know, quite a few hundred million ones and such, but I'd have to actually do some research to answer that question adequately, but I don't see them all the time. And I would say that this is, you know, it's a little bit alarming. You've got to ask yourself how efficient are they? And they took the first steps to do this. And I think one of the important things is to look how it's divided out. The proposal covers $100 million to public safety facilities and technology, $900 million to roads, drainage and transportation projects, and $200 million to parks. So I just don't know how often the machine needs to be fed $1.2 billion here because this is already a debt. This isn't like they're saying, here, we're going to go ahead and, you know, take it out of the tax money we just got from all y'all or nothing. They're saying, here, please approve our ability, believe in us enough to let us take this debt out, another $1.2 billion. And so I don't know. That's the difficult thing to me, you know. And, yes, often these things get divided on party lines, you know, And that's kind of frustrating. You know, here it turns out 3-2 among party lines to authorize these county departments to develop an improved capital improvement bond proposal. And one thing that was kind of interesting that in it was the worst first, because it turned out that Commissioner Ellis had been complaining that some of the least the people with the greatest need were getting left out in when they doled out the money from these bonds. So now they're saying they're going to go with a worst first requirement. And I'm sure that that's going to help a lot of people, you know, go ahead and believe in voting for it, you know, because, hey, I'm going to get something for my community. And I kind of get that mentality. But like at what cost when we're just going further and further in debt? I don't know. Do people think that's relevant even asking that question anymore? I don't know.
Well, I want to say one thing about that. I see this quote here from Lena Hidalgo I think is interesting. And she's just kind of saying it says that the language defining which specific projects the bond's actually going to fund is still uncertain. So they want $1 billion, but they don't know what it's going to go towards yet. Lena Hidalgo says, we know that the bond would build or repair roughly 300 miles of county roads, create or improve close to 80 parks, and potentially reduce flooding for up to 13,000, about 13,000 residents through drainage improvements. And it goes on. Well, like, if you think about that, 13,000 residents, I'm happy for those people, but 13,000 residents get better flood drainage out of a city of four million in the greater Houston area for $1 billion. And I guess it's nice that those parks get, you know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being nitpicky here, but I feel like, do these things come, and excuse my ignorance, Michael, do these things come in the form, like, how did the taxpayer actually pay for this?
The bonds are issued, and then they're basically, you know, again, more research exactly, but government bonds, municipal bonds, they're issued to investors and then paid back by the issuing entity, the government. How's the government get money of any type? I guess it does occasionally sell services, right? Like when you go and you get a ticket and you pay them to make a copy of the ticket. Well, they just made a little money on that. So it's not like they only make money off tax anymore. That's kind of a misnomer. They sell services, but they basically, all that money is come from government productivity or taxation. So they're just borrowing today to pay for things. They're saying, look, you know, we can't take care of all these roads without it. They're saying this basically. I mean, it has to, I mean, in a way, these 13,000 residents, are they going to be flooded? What about the guest we had on about a year and a half ago? I think it was from up near Kingswood, talking about how their neighborhood was being flooded out perpetually ever since a neighborhood was built next to them where they raised it, the neighborhood next to them. I mean, so our answer is going to come to those systemic questions like that? No, we're just going to keep sinking, keep building, and keep trying to go in debt to, what, rebuild the parks and the bonds? I don't know. I mean, people are going to feel different ways. I can, you know, obviously, I just think it's important to realize that it's more debt just to do those things you mentioned. And if anything, maybe that worst first will cause a little bit more even distribution for what it's worth. But like you said, you know, it does sound like a minimal amount of people when you put, you know, 13,000 over 4.2 million. What fraction is that?
Yeah, not much. Yeah, well, all right, guys, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free here on 90.1 KPFT Houston. We do this every Friday. You can find out more about our show at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can find out how to support us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com as well. So I'd like to go to this next story that I found in the last couple of days from US Right to Know. They're over at usrtk.org. And it is, they've actually been doing a pretty good job of following up on claims of gain of function research, and not just talking about it, but particularly by them filing Freedom of Information Act request, open records request, and they continue to do reporting on all the documents they've got. So on this page, on their website, it just links to all the reporting on the origins of COVID-19, gain of function research in biolabs. And they've got a whole bunch of articles that have come out over the last year or more that are coming as a result of their FOIA requests. And so the latest article that I'd like to discuss is by journalist Emily Kopp, who wrote this article titled "Critic of Congressional Probe into Gain of Function Research Helped Fund on Gain of Function Study." So I'll say it again. A critic of a congressional probe into gain of function research, somebody who is criticizing and attacking the idea that there should be a congressional investigation into gain of function research, was also involved with funding Wuhan gain of function study. And well, who is that critic who has become quite a popular figure on the corporate mainstream media, particularly CNN and MSNBC over the last 2 years? And I would say a hero to many people, or at least people, because Dr. Hotez, based in the Baylor College of Medicine, does a lot of work in the Houston area, speaks in the Houston area very regularly, lives in the Houston area, and yeah, he's a Houstonian. So we've covered some of this. We've covered some of this on the show. I recently did a video that you can find at theconsciousresistance.com called "That Peter Hotez is Consistently Wrong and Dangerous." And the reason I said that is because this man has continued to be paraded around, as I said, as like some sort of expert. He's got the degrees and the credentials, but he clearly is not informed because he's constantly wrong. And he, throughout COVID, claimed that there was going to be, you know, zero chance, his words, Lena Hidalgo's words as well, zero chance that the unvaccinated would make it through the next 2 weeks, and just fear-mongering about that. And then also whatever schools were trying to open up, and 2021, he was, and 2020, he was really speaking out against opening the schools and talking about the danger of the kids infecting the teachers and this and that. And if they opened up the schools in Florida and Texas, it was going to be the end of the world. And that didn't happen. It didn't pan out. And this is because, as we know, the kids are at a very, very low risk of getting sick. And, you know, it's just fear mongering that they're going to pass it around. Right. So, and this didn't pan out. Anyways, I tried to call out Hotez on that at a recent event in Houston. I wasn't able to ask him to his face. My point was saying all that as we get into the story now, U.S. Right to Know, critic of congressional probe into gain of function research helped fund Wuhan gain of function study. So let's get into it. This article by Emily Kopp for U.S. Right to Know says that prominent scientist Peter Hotez, who has denounced a congressional investigation to gain of function research, also helped fund Wuhan Institute of Virology gain-of-function work, which was flagged by congressional investigators. Peter Hotez, again, the dean of Baylor College of Medicine, National School of Tropical Medicine, has been a fierce critic of potential hearings next year into the possible origin of COVID-19 and whether or not the National Institutes of Health prematurely discredited the hypotheses. Hotez decried the hearings as nothing less than a, quote, plan to undermine the fabric of science in America in a viral tweet thread last week, and he dismissed it as a, quote, outlandish conspiracy, the possibility that a lab accident spread the COVID, whatever. However, Hotez, his own 2012 to 2017 NIH grant, which was for the development of a SARS vaccine, had the stated aim of responding to, quote, any accidental release from a laboratory in addition to a possible zoonotic spillover. So what it's saying is that even in his own contract where he's developing vaccines, they at least... so he could get grant money. He was like, well, we're developing this so in case there's an accidental release. And now he's claiming that that idea is just outlandish conspiracy theory, and who would dare believe that? So he got a $6.1 million NIH grant, which they say raises the possibility of, quote, deliberate spreading of the virus by bioterrorist attack. So again, Hotez in his own grants is acknowledging that there could be attacks, there could be accidental release. And the grant specifically states SARS outbreak remains a serious concern, mainly due to possible zoonotic reintroduction of SARS-CoV into humans, accidental release from a laboratory, or deliberate spreading of the virus by a bioterrorist attack. So clearly he puts that as one of the possibilities in his own grant. Now, interestingly enough, and not surprisingly enough, Hotez did not respond to emails from Emily Kopp or the U.S. Right to Know for requests for comment before the article. And instead, once this article was posted, he's just begun attacking Emily Kopp and the U.S. Right to Know Twitter. So, for example, if any of you go out there and look up this story and maybe you want to see what Hotez is saying himself, he's like Anthony Fauci saying that an attack on him is an attack on science. And he is basically saying that U.S. Right to Know, because they have certain investors, namely the Organic Consumers Association, and the guy behind Organic Consumers Association, Ronnie Cummins, has been labeled a conspiracy theorist by some in the left-wing, quote-unquote, progressive media. So thereby, Hotez is saying, don't pay attention to this reporting on my grants. You know, I mean, isn't that like just a classic example of like, he's like, wait, hold on. They're being funded by somebody that I don't like and with opinions I don't agree with. So that means don't pay attention to the reporting on the facts about me. Nonetheless, let's get deeper into this research on chimeric coronaviruses that was done by Hotez. Hotez has not mentioned his own connection to a project involving a laboratory-generated chimeric SARS-related coronavirus that has come under Congress's microscope. The project was helmed by Zheng Li Shi, who is also known as the Bat Lady from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And as part of this NIH grant, Hotez subcontracted funding for research on combined or so-called chimeric coronaviruses, a paper shows. And Hotez's grant underwrote two of the Bat Lady's collaborators on the project. So he is involved in funding a grant that goes towards a project with the Bat Lady and two of her collaborators. Hotez also subcontracted for research about combining chimeric coronaviruses. And, you know, I did get to talk to Emily Kopp about this, and the whole, like, there's an argument to be said, guys, about, like, what is the definition even of gain of function. We've seen this with Rand Paul confronting Anthony Fauci at different hearings, and Fauci saying that's not gain of function. You know, it's wrong. You're describing something else. And so they could be splitting hairs and arguing semantics, because that's what Hotez is doing now, claiming, no, I never was involved in gain of function research. This isn't gain of function. But as Emily Kopp told me, then perhaps maybe we need to have a conversation about changing what the definition is of gain of function. Or even if this doesn't qualify as gain of function in someone's definition, doesn't mean it's not dangerous, right? And this is some specific info on that. In a 2017 paper co-funded by Hotez, the Bat Lady, and her colleagues, they generated a recombinant virus from two SARS-CoV-related coronaviruses. And this research happened in 2017. You got to remember that 2017, the United States government had put a temporary moratorium or a pause on gain-of-function research right before 2017. So there should have been no further research or gain-of-function research. And again, is this qualify as gain-of-function? It depends on who you ask. But there are some experts that were interviewed for this article that say that this research, it violates the pause on gain-of-function research because it's chimeric, it's combining viruses. And another study of one of the coronaviruses that was part of this chimera found that this particular chimeric virus that Peter Hotez is working on, Peter Hotez, doctor based in Houston, claiming that there's no reason to investigate these theories about a lab origin of COVID-19. And one of the studies on the virus that he, or the chimeric viruses that he is working on, says that these were, quote, poised for human emergence. Another paper about this same virus says that this type of research may, quote, be too risky to pursue. And we have David Relman of Stanford University, microbiologist and biosecurity expert, says that this, quote, this work should have been heavily reviewed for gain of function and probably should have been subject to the pause prior to December 2017. So, you know, the article goes on there, but I think the last point I really want to make here is that Peter Hotez is also part of something known as the Lancet Commission. And it is this, the Lancet, of course, is one of the most prestigious, you know, well-respected in most circles, scientific medical journals. And the Lancet created this COVID-19 Commission, which was a panel of experts that were trying to investigate the origins of SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19. And one of the commission chairs, Jeffrey Sachs, he actually has been calling for an impartial investigation of the lab leak hypothesis. Now, why does this matter? Because Hotez actually sits on this commission as well. So Hotez sits on the Lancet Commission, just a few experts who are supposed to help us understand from a scientific perspective the origins of what happened over the last 2 years. However, Hotez, as I've been saying, who himself was involved in this type of gain-of-function chimeric research, has been saying, no, there's no research, there's no reason to investigate this conspiracy theory. And then you have Jeffrey Sachs, though, who's the actual commission chair, who's a Columbia University economist, saying that there needs to be a real investigation. And, you know, this is interesting. Jeffrey Sachs told Emily Kopp at U.S. Right to Know, quote, whenever I discuss the possibility of SARS-CoV-2 as a laboratory release, Hotez strongly rejected that possibility, but never explained to me or to the Lancet Commission that he actually had a grant that was based on that very kind of risk. He certainly should have been clear on that. And so, you know, this is, for those of you who might maybe think that that's all conspiracy theory and we know everything that we know, I don't think that that's anywhere near the case. There's still plenty of info that is coming out. People like Peter Hotez here in the Houston area are continuing to try to silence people who question him. I'm science, don't question me. And I mean this because we saw this with the journalist, Emily Kopp, who published this article that Hotez has since gone on the attack against her credibility on Twitter and, of course, blocking her for, you know, daring to challenge or question him. But this seems to be par for the course for what I've seen from Dr. Peter Hotez. But I think that's where I'm going to leave it there, guys. So, yeah, what do you think? What do you think, Micah?
It's nice to see people out there, you know, doing the work of getting the information out. And that was really interesting is they talking about gain of function and just the redefinition of it. And I don't know how we could ever really have a lockdown on knowing what's happening like that. You know what I'm saying? I heard that being spoken between the two of y'all in the conversation, and I get the inclination towards it, especially once they have funding. Doesn't that sort of seem to change it to you? Like, if it was just like one of our friends in their basement doing some research on some weird germs in a petri dish, it might be one thing. But like, once they start getting, you know, funding, and it feels like they have a direction then, right? And they have like a direction you towards something that isn't, you know, beneficial when we all give or are taxed or allow it to be under the presumption that it's for the good of all, right? I mean, isn't that kind of the idea? It's like, well, I don't want to give this money, but we need roads or whatever, you know? And I think that's where it's going. But I got to also ask you, how often or how much do you think that this is just like the first coming of this stuff? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, them wanting to stop. Like, why would they be doing it in the first place? So, and do you think that motivation is just going to go away?
Yeah, I know, man. Every time I hear stories about, like, them mixing viruses and stuff, and I know I've mentioned it on this show before, but that book, Unit 731, goes all the way back to World War II in Japan and maybe even further. People have been thinking about using viruses as a form of warfare for a long time, and the idea of combining them to make them more dangerous is really sinister, because obviously, you know, it's just so obvious how damaging a pandemic is after everything we've been through. And a lot of stuff sticks out about that Peter Hotez interview. Like, he went on Joe Rogan and talked about how he never debates anybody. And I just think it's so funny to just have somebody who's characterized like that and think he's above debating and all those kinds of things, and have these obvious ties back to these people. And kind of like, I don't know, that just drives me crazy that he has all these conflicts of interest that are coming home, and he would work on these things and have the audacity to kind of say, I'm, you know, a high enough public figure that I shouldn't be questioned or something like that. Like, he just tries to have this authority and then threatens people to not take vaccines, which could potentially have been something that he was involved in. So I don't know. It's just really wild. And I don't know how to feel about it, but and another thing I was going to say is I was listening to, what was his name? Michael Yon. Have you heard of that guy?
I don't think so.
He's a journalist who travels the world and focuses on like military stuff. People should really check his work out, but he was on a podcast recently talking about how famine, pandemics and war always go together. And when you have one, you get the other two. And that's just like what, you know, we have to be aware of. And I think it's just kind of tied into that. And it makes me think about like the homesteading situation as well. Like here at the House of Jay, we've been like collecting our cans. It's August. It's time to get involved in like gardening and stuff like that. So I don't know. And, you know, obviously we have this this cool workshop coming up here on September 3rd. John Bush, Exit and Build, Homesteading on a Budget workshop. And you can go to our site and get access to that through a cool little banner right there at the top on the HoustonFreethinkers.com. And it'll take you to their site. They have more information and stuff like that.
Well, you know, one thing you were saying there, Johnny, that I think is interesting, you were mentioning, you know, just the cycle of things that we see, and you referenced this other person quoting it. But then you also, you know, talking about, you know, how you're doing stuff there and at the House of Jay, and y'all are moving forward. One of the things I saw, you mentioned the workshop at Live Free Academy. I saw there they have this one from Marjorie Wildcraft, how to grow half your food in your own backyard in less than an hour per day. Are you to that standard yet? I'm not, but that's kind of interesting. And I think, you know, we all can expand what we're growing. And if it's something that you want to learn more about, I mean, there's so many different things they're talking about. I wanted to share, you know, that aspect with both you and Derek, because they say you can produce 20,000 to 60,000 calories per year. And I know, you know, both, we were heavily involved in the house, the last organic outpost, and we saw a lot of food produced there. It's interesting to think of people looking to, you know, absolutely produce food in their yard. And that's what one of the many topics available there. Another topic I thought was interesting was, you know, just different ways to purchase a home outside the traditional mortgage system. So, you know, it seems to have a couple of things that, if on a quick perusal could be beneficial, you know, given, you know, wherever you are in life. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not growing enough food. We got some more trees we planted, but I don't think we're producing 20,000 to 60,000 calories per year.
I think we're all trying to step it up, man. There's a lot of things going on right now, and people like Peter Hotez would rather have you just kind of run around scared and assume the answer to your problems are through authority figures like himself, when in reality, it's trying to find and better yourself and find ways around these things. Work on your immune system, you know, regardless of whether you want a vaccine or not, you should be working on your immune system. So, I mean, that's just how I feel about it. Do you know what's good for your immune system, Derek? Music.
Music, yeah. And let's check this out. Yeah. Ganesha, this is, what is Imaginary it, Micah? Imaginary Person. Imaginary Person? All right, we'll be right back, guys. Stay tuned.
Nessa, we want you to send us the music you like, too. I mean, we love getting the music out there, and we love getting turned on to new music. We've received CDs at the station. Soon we'll be in a new location, and we can give you an address to send us music, get the music out.
Your station location, man.
Yeah, station location.
We ready to jump in this?
The Mighty 90.
So we're just going to get right into it. We have here from Children's Health Defense. Pittsfield, Massachusetts residents file suit over Verizon cell phone tower, Verizon tower injuries. And this has been going on for like 2 years. I know Derek has done a cool documentary about some of this stuff, and they're still on the next leg of the battle here, really. So it's in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, or Pittsfield, sorry. Lawyers supported by Children's Health Defense are representing four families in a suit in Massachusetts. Superior Court is seeking to reinstate the Pittsfield Board of Health cease and desist order against Verizon. The case is the next step in the residents' 24-month ordeal that began when Verizon turned on a cell tower in their neighborhood known as Shacktown. As soon as the tower went operational, people began getting sick. Almost 20 have been definitively identified, but there may be more negatively affected. And there's a lot of stuff like this. Like, they basically went to court and essentially in a round proved that it was making 17 individuals ill, and their homes were so uninhabitable that many had to move away. Others moved in with relatives. There was people sleeping in their freaking cars. The tower had rendered people unable to sleep or sleep elusive, maybe just difficult, cognition impaired. Some children were vomiting in their beds at night. Vertigo, heart palpitations, severe headaches were part of the constellation of neurological symptoms experienced by the affected neighbors. So they issued they had their neighborhood, who seems to be fighting for them at this point, but having some kind of like political bureaucracy issues, some people trying to block them. But anyway, on April 11, 2022, they issued an emergency order. They found the health and sanitary code violations. They declared that the cell tower was a public nuisance, gave Verizon 7 days to request a hearing, and if it did not, they had to discontinue their operation. Verizon then filed a lawsuit contending the board is powerless and cannot protect Pittsfield residents from the tower's toxic wireless emissions. So, I mean, the board was, you know, trying to solve the problem, but Verizon had, you know, they're refusing to admit anything, because you got to realize that this is like a bigger issue in a sense, because if Verizon was to go ahead and let them win this lawsuit or admit that these children are puking or whatever, then they are going to have to admit that all over, or people are going to have to rescind. There's going to be more safety tests, which I wish I could think of the where it was said, but, you know, there wasn't any much safety testing or any at all in a lot of the 5G technology and things like that. So anyway, these guys are just fighting. Tyler, Pagonia, and Ruffer, in cooperation with Verizon. So the Verizon team was thwarting the board's effort to secure outside counsel and ensuring that the board could not defend its emergency order. As a result, the board was coerced into rescinding the emergency order. On July 1st, 2022, the residents' lawsuit challenges the board's decision to rescind, but its principal focus is on Tyre Pagonia Ruffer. The complainant seeks a court declaration that their interface was improper, unlawful, and tainted the entire process. If the Superior Court grants the requested relief, these individuals will have to stop their improper interference, and the board will be allowed the flexibility it needs to remediate the harms that is already found to exist. So, I mean, just one last quote here at the end. The board is trying to do the right thing, but they have been prevented from carrying out their duties because of cronyism and favoritism, continued Holland. We hope that this suit will stop the interface and free up the board so it can force Verizon to the negotiating table as the emergency order intended its recession. So
I appreciate you sharing that one, Johnny. I think that's important, and especially so it's like a press release that Children's Health Defense shared out there. And, you know, I've never heard of Pittsfield, Massachusetts. I don't know how many people have. So, you know, if we don't cover this and get these press releases out, it's likely that, you know, many people probably won't hear about them. And as you mentioned, I have done some work on this and did a documentary on this topic, and it's something that I realized pretty quickly that people still consider to be in the realm of so-called conspiracy theory, or at least like you're just silly, you don't understand science, because we all know that it's all safe. EMFs are, you know, non-ionizing radiation. There's nothing to worry about, et cetera. Yeah. So I think that these cases are important to bring out there and at least get to the public's eye to hear that people are having these kinds of effects. And I think that really, from what I've experienced and the people I've interviewed and talked to over the years, it seems like sensitivity to electromagnetism and EMFs is different for different people. Some people are extremely sensitive, and some people, you know, can't be near Wi-Fi without feeling like they get headaches. And then other people can deal with things better. But there are some circumstances where people living near towers where it clearly is having a negative impact on their health. Mike, could you want to add anything to that one?
Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Population 49,000.
Wow.
What's the population?
49,000 something.
49,000. Yeah, so not, like, I mean, that's the crazy thing. 700
or 1,500. I mean, it's 49,000 people. They've got their own radio stations, you know. It's not just like Nowheresville.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, like, they were talking about how they had plenty of room in the city to move the towers, and Verizon had refused that as well. I mean, it's just wild when you see a big company like that bullying, you know, because a lot of people see, like, think of city councils as always being all super official and stuff. At a smaller town, I would imagine it's like relatively chill. Like, you know, they're just trying to figure out their small town things and
get in place though. Like in them smaller towns, like you said, it's chill. Like everybody's cool. Right. So it's maybe a little bit harder for Verizon to implant a 5G champion like they did in Houston. We got a 5G champion.
Well, they have lawyers for the little guys. Apparently they got to pay off the big guys.
Well, I want to add to this too, just while we're on it. You know, I saw this happen a couple of years ago, and I know I talked about it on the show during my battle against 5G in Houston. We learned that there was a specific board that actually approved like the placement of cell towers. I learned about it because somebody contacted me, and they were trying to fight a tower being built near this church about less than 200 feet away from their house. And so they were going to testify to this board. I did some investigation to the board and found out these three-member board, which is unelected, chosen by the mayor. You know, one of them works for like a company that works with AT&T and Verizon. There was all these conflicts of interest, and they basically overrode this woman and myself and other people who came to speak up, and they built the tower near their house. Like, I mean, it's just people don't realize quite how much, you know, big wireless really, they fund the media, they fund a lot of newspapers, and they also do exert a lot of control. So, yeah, but let's go ahead and continue. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free here. We got probably 8 or 9 minutes or so left here on the show and got a couple stories. And I know Johnny's got an important one and Micah's got some. We're not going to get into all of it, but I wanted to at least mention this one. I know that I've mentioned on our show over the last 2 months that I was following this Utah case of claims of ritual sexual abuse in Utah by the sheriff's county, the Utah Sheriff's Office announcing investigation. And they're still currently investigating claims of so-called ritualized child sexual abuse. And so I started investigating that, looking into that, started hearing more about the Mormon Church in Utah, the Church of Latter-day Saints, and have had a lot of people reach out to me. And so it was interesting, as I've been researching that, just a couple days ago, the Associated Press did this pretty big investigation, published 7 years of sex abuse, how Mormon officials let it happen. And I encourage you to go read this. Of course, all this will be linked at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. But all I really want to say is that this story details how a child, a young, I think a seven-year-old girl, was being abused by her father, and the church knew about it. And it happened for 7+ years. This evolved to the young girl being abused all the way into her teen years, and to her young sister being abused essentially since her birth, until, you know, this kind of the cops eventually intervened. The man was originally finally arrested in 2017 by Homeland Security agents after law enforcement officials found, think about this, there's a farmer in New Zealand. He gets caught with child porn. When they catch him, they look at his phone and he's got videos of naked kids. They track down those videos down to this man in Arizona. This guy was actually working as a Border Patrol agent. His name is Paul Douglas Adams. And he was part of the Mormon church as well. And the church knew that he had been abusing his kids for at least 7 years, and they covered it up. It says the Associated Press has obtained nearly 12,000 pages of sealed records from an unrelated child sex abuse lawsuit against the Mormon church in West Virginia. The documents offer the most detailed and comprehensive look yet at the so-called helpline. And what they mean is that when people need help in the church for different reasons, they have a helpline they want you to call. And this guy, the bishop who heard the confession, this guy actually, the abuser, this Paul Douglas Adams, actually went to the church trying to seek help for his problem he said he had. And the bishop that he spoke to tried to go to the helpline and called the helpline. The helpline is manned by these lawyers, essentially, that are designed to make sure that any potential damaging stories or anything that could hurt the church, that they are able to scoop up and kind of manage and take care of. And the bishop said he reported to them, and they told him to keep it quiet, that because he heard about it through confession, he couldn't tell law enforcement, and the abuse continued. And so families of the survivors filing the lawsuit say that this shows that it's a part of a system that can easily be misused by church leaders to divert the accusations, abuse accusations, away from law enforcement and instead to church attorneys who may bury the problem, leaving victims in harm's way. So, I mean, it's a big story. The church has responded. I encourage people to go look at the article and do the research yourself on that. But it's disturbing, but we got to mention it. It's happening. I'm going to just jump from that one to one more that I wanted to at least mention in the headline. This one's coming from the Daily Beast, just reported in the last week. Schools spent millions on faulty COVID scanners. And I swear we probably reported this a year ago, telling you guys that this is going to be a waste of time. You remember this report? We'll go back to this one.
I saw that coming.
Wired Magazine, November 2020. Yeah, this is all the way back in November 2020 that we were talking about.
Dudes in a basement are like, yeah, that's probably going to be great technology.
Well, I feel like it's just like after 9/11, they sold them on this idea that we need the body scanners. It's going to stop terrorists, and it hasn't done anything, right? This is how people make money off these alleged, you know, pandemics and crises. So look, November 2020, Wired Magazine does an investigation and says they find dozens of school districts have purchased facial recognition and thermal cameras, heat cameras, to monitor fevers to try to detect COVID. And we talked about this, like how this was the militarization and the surveillance state at the schools. Well, here we are. That was November 2020. Here we are, August 2022. And now the Daily Beast has their own investigation saying that schools spent millions of dollars on faulty COVID scanners. Some of the thermal scanners and cameras sold to schools to detect fevers would regularly fail if someone asked, I just locked me out of this article. But basically it's saying that they'd failed to do their job. And just like I was saying, with the post 9/11 world, the body scanners, or the take off your socks, take off your shoes, all that stuff, the security theater, this is the kind of equivalent in the biosecurity area. This is the security theater. Let's buy a bunch of stuff that isn't going to really do anything, but it allows us to get a bunch of money from the government. We can pretend like we're doing things.
So you get money from it to spend on buying the things, but they also get money in the research, you know, to develop the technology. They're selling it the whole time, you know, and then refining it, you know. So it's like kind of like socialized bearing the cost of it, right, while they make the profit.
Exactly.
Each time. It's not free.
Exactly.
They got a really good thing going there.
Here's exactly. I mean, if you're into this industry, and then this is what has been labeled disaster capitalism in some cases. Like, people come in and they know they can make money, a profit off like certain disasters. So the Daily Beast says that they found 200 school districts, over 200 school districts nationwide, that were persuaded to buy these devices between 2020 and 2021 by a number of companies totaling more than $1.1 million. Internal emails, which were obtained through public
records. $11 million.
Okay. Okay, I'm seeing something on my screen. Okay, so even more, $11 million. And basically they're saying that the industry has been compared to the, quote, Wild West, and that in many cases the scanners are now sitting dormant in schools gathering dust. So, yeah, and again, this came from the three COVID relief packages, which were more $190 billion. People got all kinds of money, so they're spending that money on all kinds of things, and they don't even work.
It's just the school. Let's just try to think about how many other corporate places invested in some
or government places
stuff.
Like
courthouses, exactly.
Municipal courthouses, tax offices, anywhere that they felt like they could justify scanning you to come in and you'd still have to come in. Any place like that, like a school.
Like, that's like the authoritarian dream, right? Like, yeah. Everyone just pays with their face and you just walk around. You don't ever need anything.
It could just be like a little imaginary thing. You point at them and they'd still feel good about it.
Right.
Johnny, we got about a minute left. Did you want to get into the story at all? A minute and a half or so? I don't know if you can do that, if we should save it for next week. I know you wanted to get into this one.
We can save it for next week.
Okay, let's do that. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, we've covered quite a bit here. We had the interview about Hotez. We talked about some local police harassment of an elderly couple way back in the beginning of this show. I want to remind everybody that our show, again, we are partnering with the Live Free Academy this month, and we're we're going to be finding out what this whole homesteading workshop, this on a budget thing, is all about. I mean, it sounds like something that I know I'm interested in. Maybe people who listen to our show, who hear a lot of the things we talk about, including inflation, potential food shortages, disruptions, all that stuff, and maybe don't have a lot of money to go buy, you know, a land or homestead. This might be something you want to check out. You can go to the Houston.
Is it only a live event, or can, if you purchase it, will you get like a video audio after?
I think there's options for watching it after the fact. That's usually the case with his events. But yeah, people, if you want to check it out, it's at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. There's a big old banner right there in the middle. You'll see it, Exit and Build Homesteading Budget Workshop. And you can get registered, check it out. We'll be talking about that over the coming weeks and probably have John on soon to tell us more about it. But in the meantime, guys, it's been a great show. Anything else we should add before we get out of here?
We're going to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act sometime in the future.
Next week. We'll be back for that. All right, guys. Till next time. Peace.
Y'all have fun.
Be ready to go, go, go. Soon as it drop, I flow. Keeping it rocking, nobody stop. The music beyond our control. It's a rebel, yeah. The soul within and beyond. Light strong, keeping it on as we traverse this Babylon. It's a crooked road. My people been walking. Some disappeared soon as they started talking. When they try to turn the mind control signal off, that's when the goons come a knocking. But there's too many of us. They can't touch all of us. Either way, we be rising up. We are unified. Our forces have multiplied. And our souls have been fortified. Cause some have an appetite for the frequency of rights, with a tendency to feed in the night. What do we do with the vampires of this empire? Bring them to the light, to the light, to the light, to the light. That's right. We face them in the light, in the light, in the light. Face them in the light. Torches blazing, the curtain is raising, people embracing the changes, coming with the kingdom running, and we tumbling the whole foundation. Raised in a concrete jungle, from the inside watching all of it crumble. I prayed for the day that people awake, together we break from the struggle. There's too many of us, they can't touch all of us. Either way, we be rising up. We are unified, our forces have multiplied. And our souls have been fortified. Cause some have an appetite for the frequency of rights, with a tendency to feed in the night. What do we do with the vampires of this empire? We bring them to the light, to the light, to the light, to the light. That's right. We face them in the light, in the light, in the light. Face them in the light. The only thing to do when the world's so dark, to light that inner spark and let it shine real hard. I drive that message like a stake through the heart and put a light upon the shadows. Oh, 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 all of the shadows.